From WHQR Public Media in Wilmington, North Carolina, this is Coastline. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn. Walking around the Cape Fear region can be tricky, even downright dangerous in some areas. For example, the Gary Shell Cross City Trail in Wilmington runs from Wrightsville Beach to the University of North Carolina, Wilmington, before making a half loop, passing the Cameron Art Museum, and in the process, linking at least four city parks. But if you're trying to walk around Monkey Junction or cross Market Street near 21st Street or travel by bicycle or on foot from Brunswick to New Hanover County, you could be putting your life at risk. Port City Daily reports that last year Wilmington police recorded over 100 roadway accidents involving pedestrians and pedal cyclists. Taking the bus to and from work in the Cape Fear region largely arises out of need. There are few choice riders, and people who can drive their own vehicles often choose to do that. Southeastern North Carolina is a fast-growing region, and part of dealing with that growth is planning infrastructure to support it, including traffic patterns that will support a heavier vehicle load and alternate methods of transportation, like walking. Today, we're going to hear from two key people involved in planning for the Cape Fear region's traffic growth. Don Bennett is a traffic engineer for the city of Wilmington. Don Bennett, welcome to Coastline.
Thank you.
And Mike Kozlowski is executive director for the Wilmington Urban Area Metropolitan Planning Organization, or WMPO, which serves the greater Wilmington area that includes Brunswick, New Hanover, and Pender counties, as well as seven municipalities within those counties. Mike Kozlowski, welcome to the program.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Good to have both of you here. Today's discussion, as a reminder, is pre-recorded. Pedestrian safety is clearly a key issue for this region. A state report finds that in 2016, almost 9% of all pedestrians involved in motor vehicle crashes were killed. I would think that number would be higher, a pedestrian colliding with a vehicle. But Don Bennett, how do you see the pedestrian safety issue in the region? How would you characterize it?
Pedestrians are not widespread through our area. They are intermittent. You do not experience them on a very regular basis. And when I say very regular, many people could drive to work, drive to school, go to their destinations, not see a pedestrian during the course of the day. Of course, that intensity gets a little bit higher as you get closer to downtown and around some of our bigger pedestrian generators. And I think that's one of the reasons why our motorists need to be a little extra vigilant, because if you're not used to seeing them, you need to be on the lookout for them.
And what are some of the issues in a region that is trying to expand its walkability but isn't quite there yet, Mike Kozlowski, that contribute to pedestrian safety issues?
Well, I think there's a number of different issues that relate to pedestrian safety. But, you know, one is funding. There's a lack of, or a limited amount of resources that are available to make bicycle and pedestrian improvements. And the other is a lack of infrastructure that's out there today for the users to utilize to traverse the community. If you're not within the urban core of the city of Wilmington, for example, there are limited infrastructure. There's limited infrastructure that exists out in some of the subdivision streets that surround the urban core. And so having the infrastructure in place will create utilization. And then, and also having the funding in place. And we're making strides in the community to improve walking and biking throughout this region. And so the MPO, for example, we've funded over 20 bicycle and pedestrian projects through our surface transportation block grant program and our transportation alternative set aside program. So we are making strides to improve biking and walking in the community.
And so are you talking about the actual creation of new paths for walkers and for bicyclists?
I am. We're using the funding that we have available that's allocated to the MPO, and we're allocating that money out to our member jurisdictions to make improvements in their communities. For example, we have funded the walkway under the Heidi Trash Drawbridge, which is hopefully wrapping up here in the next month or so. We've funded the Island Greenway down in Carolina Beach in partnership with the town of Carolina Beach. There's a number of projects that are getting ready to come on board within the town of Leland to improve walking and biking. So we are making strides to improve the infrastructure for those users.
Don Bennett, traffic engineer for the city of Wilmington, you actually identify some issues that wouldn't require funding, that if people would just pay a little bit more attention to, might decrease some of those safety problems for pedestrians.
Correct. As I alluded to earlier, when we're behind the wheel as a motorist, we need to be ever vigilant of looking at our surroundings and being completely engaged in the driving task so we can see the conflicts that are presented to us as we traverse our route.
And one of the issues that I know you've identified is vehicles, drivers who are trying to turn right on red. What often happens there? What step do they skip?
Well, when we look at anyone making a right turn on red, right turn, whether it be a right turn on red at a traffic signal or whether it be a right turn at a stop sign, if you have a sidewalk approaching from your right, a lot of times our drivers are so focused on what their vehicular conflict is. Obviously, if you're making a right turn, your primary vehicular conflict is coming from your left. They will focus all of their attention to the left and then not realize that while they are looking left, you may have a bicycle or a pedestrian arrive from your right. And if that sidewalk continues across the intersection, marked or not, there's a legal crosswalk there. As such, you know, you have to now yield to that pedestrian or bicyclist prior to entering the roadway.
Is this a reason that in a lot of major metropolitan areas it's illegal to turn right on red?
Well, even if we took out right on red at all of our traffic signals, this condition still exists where you have a stop sign. So, you know, you could address it by removing the right on red. Of course, you have resulting congestion issues that may come from that. Where we do have high pedestrian conflict and where we have identified those issues, we have requested to eliminate the right on red. Example would be 17th Street at Medical Center Drive. We have eliminated right on red there. The primary purpose was the right turn would actually pull across the crosswalk so that they could see traffic coming from the left and completely block the path of the pedestrian from coming across.
There is another issue that is a driver behavioral issue that contributes not just to collisions with pedestrians and people on bikes, but also collisions with other vehicles, and that is distracted driving. Why don't you unpack that for us, Mike Kozlowski? What does distracted driving include?
Well, I mean, distracted driving includes anything from looking at your radio to playing on your cell phone. I know we had a conversation before the show where I left my neighborhood. There was somebody who left the neighborhood across the street, and she was driving down Eastwood Road, and she had her phone out in front of her. I don't know if she was trying to take a picture of her looking to see what she looked like in the morning, put on Facebook, or what, but you could see that she was veering both to the right and left along the road, and it created a dangerous situation. What I did was I stayed back behind the vehicle so that she wouldn't hit me.
And the thing is, this is not just an issue for younger drivers. This is something that cuts across all age brackets, every socioeconomic indicator, Don Bennett. I mean, what is there to do about people who won't put down their phones while they're driving? And so many people won't.
Well, in North Carolina, it actually is illegal to text and drive.
Well, it's illegal to text and drive, but is it illegal for me to look at a text that I just received, or is it illegal for me to dial my phone?
You would have to talk to a law enforcement officer as to what their interpretation of the statute is on that. The statute is clear that texting and driving is illegal, in as much that I would deem reading a text being that. But, you know, legal or not legal or otherwise, the consequences that arise from being distracted from your driving task are so great. Dealing with the emotional issues on the other side of that, aside from the property damage, we have injuries. There are so many things that arise from it. It just isn't worth it. The driving task in and of itself pretty much consumes all your cognitive processing ability in your brain. They found that even taking a sip of coffee is a distraction. Adjusting the radio or the heat controls in the car are also a distraction. And none of these are things that are illegal, but they're still taking your eyes off of the roadway to perform that. And a lot of what we're seeing in the vehicle systems now, for example, I have been in vehicles where the climate control now is through a touchscreen on the dash. The knobs and the buttons where you have a tactile, you can keep your eyes forward, and granted, you still have a mental distraction of reaching over, but keeping your eyes forward, you can tactile feel where that knob is, and it's your car, you're familiar with it. You know, okay, this is for the fan, this is for the temperature, and this is for where the heat's distributed. Same thing with the radio. Okay, preset one is here, preset two. But when you start dealing with an infotainment system, which uses touchscreen inputs, you don't have that tactile feedback or that familiar place where that button, that knob, that control is always in this position.
And so are you saying that people who have those systems in their cars should not be adjusting while they're driving?
I would say it'd be prudent to be a safe driver, to be fully engaged in the driving task, being aware of your surroundings at all times. You know, those things can be handled while you're sitting at a stop sign, while you're sitting at a traffic signal, while you're not moving.
And I heard a rumor that you actually have an auto reply on your text. Can you tell us about that? And I'll ask you about that when we come back. You're listening to Coastline. As the Cape Fear region grows, roads are bulging with increasing traffic, and planners are looking at new ways to deal with it. When we return after the break, a look at the future of public transit and other innovative ways to route vehicles. Today's discussion is pre-recorded. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline. Listening to Coastline, I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn. Today we're exploring how local and regional planners are dealing with the explosive growth of the Cape Fear region. With us today, Mike Kozlowski, Executive Director of the Wilmington Urban Area Metropolitan Planning Organization, and Don Bennett, Traffic Engineer for the City of Wilmington. Today's discussion is pre-recorded. And just before we went to break, Don Bennett, I asked you about this nifty auto reply that you have set up on your cell phone, but it's bigger than that. Tell us about it.
Well, again, we lead by example. So for persons who call my personal cell phone, the greeting they get when I am unable to answer the phone will be, I'm either unable to answer the phone, or I throw the blurb in there about, or I'm driving and I'm not going to answer my phone. I will return your call when I'm in a safe place and can do so.
And that's an option that most people would have on their smartphones. I think there's an auto reply that you can choose, at least on an iPhone. An email from one of our listeners says, as one who commutes to work by bike as often as possible, this is an important topic for me personally. What plans are there for expanding bike lanes in Wilmington, specifically for commuting rather than recreation, and the use of existing infrastructure to expand bike routes? Mike Kozlowski, first of all, tell us what the difference is between a bike lane that's intended for commuting versus a bike lane intended for recreation.
Well, so the bike lanes that we install on various roadways in the city of Wilmington and in our region, they're intended for the cyclist that's commuting for transportation. The multi-use paths that we're building throughout the region can be used for both. There's often a debate whether they're used for recreation or transportation, and you know, my opinion is it's for both. And so those users of the multi-use pass are either going out for a joyride with their son and daughter, or they're trying to get from point A to point B. The Gary Shell Cross City Trail is a classic example of a transportation and recreation facility in the city of Wilmington. And it is used for both. You know, students that are traveling from their home to the university, for example, they can use the Gary Shell Cross City Trail. If a mom or dad wants to take their child on a leisurely bike ride, they can also use that facility. So it is a good example of something that can be used for both uses.
And the Gary Shell Cross City Trail is not yet complete?
There is one very small piece that's missing, and that's the walkway under the High Trash Drawbridge, and we are working actively to construct that project, and we do anticipate it to be completed this winter. And so that will complete the Gary Shell Cross
City Trail. So what about the parts of this region that don't have a cross city trail like that? For instance, I think Monkey Junction is a great example of an area that is also burgeoning, and you know, we're seeing a big growth in population there and vehicle load on the roads. So what about walkability and bikeability there?
So there's a number of planning efforts that have either been concluded or are underway that look at alternative modes of transportation as well as the vehicular mode. And so the city and the county have both adopted comprehensive plans. The MPO, we've prepared the Walk Wilmington pedestrian plan. We've worked with the city and New Hanover County on the Wilmington-New Hanover County comprehensive greenway plan.
Well, tell us about the Walk Wilmington plan. How extensive will that be? Will people be able to virtually walk anywhere? Is that the idea? Or what's the extent of that?
The idea and extent of that project is it was a pedestrian-only plan. It looked at how do people walk within the city of Wilmington? Where are recommended improvements for sidewalks? Where do we need crosswalks? Where do we need pedestrian signals? Things of that nature all came from that plan. And then in that plan, it prioritized the improvements. And so the city of Wilmington, for example, has a bicycle and pedestrian fund. And we use that plan to identify where the improvements should be and where the financial resources should be put where you get the greatest bang for your buck. We're currently working on Cape Fear Moving Forward 2045, which is the MPO's long-range transportation plan. It's required to be adopted every 5 years. And in that plan, we look at regionally significant projects. And one of the modes that we look at is bicycle and pedestrian improvements. And so I mentioned earlier in the broadcast about the Surface Transportation Block Grant and Transportation Alternative Set-Aside programs. In order for a project to receive federal money, it has to be included in our Metropolitan Transportation Plan.
So where is this Cape Fear 2045? What stage of the plan is it in? Are you done with public feedback?
We had our first round of public feedback, which recently closed, and we had over 7,000 either comments or responses to our online mapping tool. And so we're currently going through the process of reviewing the mapping tool. We presented the comments to our board, or summary of the comments to our board at their last meeting. And so what we're doing now is working with modal subcommittees to identify the projects. Then what we'll do is we'll develop cost estimates for the projects, and then we'll score the projects based on adopted goals and objectives and scoring criteria. And then the projects that score the highest based on that criteria would then get funded into our Metropolitan Transportation Plan. A key component of that Metropolitan Transportation Plan is it has to be fiscally constrained. So that
what
means
what is fiscally constrained?
It means that you have to be able to pay for what you're putting into that plan. And so there's a fiscal analysis that goes into our document that identifies the amount of money that's going to be available over the course of the next 25 years.
And available from which sources?
By federal, state, and local sources. And so we do that analysis, and then we identify the projects that can be funded. They then compete through the federal, state, and local prioritization process for funding.
And this emailer, Navid, I think is how you would pronounce it, he gives examples, or she, of possible bike lane expansion. The writer says the sidewalk on the eastern side of South 17th, south of Dawson Street, has a sidewalk that, best I can tell, isn't used to a great extent. Seems like an easy conversion from the existing sidewalk to a bike lane that can be joined with the routes further down South 17th, south of the hospital. South 16th may be useful for such a conversion as well. Is that realistic?
There are plans for bicycle and pedestrian infrastructure. I know one of the projects that was part of the Comprehensive Greenway Plan was a multi-use path along 17th that would link from essentially the hospital down to Independence Boulevard, which would then connect with the Gary Shell Crusty Trail. And the Gary Shell Crusty Trail is the spine of our future greenway network, but we do see a number of other paths within the city of Wilmington. One that's under construction today is the Central College Trail. And so that's expected to be complete in the next few months as well.
What is the Central College Trail?
It goes from 17th Street to Holly Tree Drive.
On
College Road, and it'll be a multi-use off-road path. Another project to improve cycling and walking in the city of Wilmington is a coordinated effort with the state of North Carolina. The DOT is going in and widening Carr Avenue. And so as part of that widening project, the city, in partnership with the state, has funded the betterments for bike lanes and sidewalks along Carr Avenue from Randall Parkway all the way out to the Martin Luther King Jr. Parkway.
And in that particular project, you're talking about a completely separate path, not just a bike. You're talking about a bike lane?
In that project, there will be bike lanes and sidewalks.
And we've heard issues, Don Bennett, with the safety of bike lanes, for example, on River Road in the city of Wilmington, that stretch of River Road that goes from Wilmington down to Carolina Beach or just by Snow's Cut Bridge, and there have been a number of fatalities. Are bike lanes really safe options?
Bike lanes can be a safe option. What we have to realize is that probably the bicycle mode, from an operations standpoint, is the most difficult mode to accommodate. And when you look at the diversity of the operations of a pedestrian, there's a very relatively small scale or spectrum in which you need to address. Motor vehicles, of course, is, you know, cars to trucks, they're fairly predictable to address. What we have found is that because of the diversity of bicyclists, you've got everybody from possibly the elementary school child who is commuting to school. You've got the family out with even a sub-elementary school child who is using a facility. And then to the other extreme, you've got somebody who may be training for the beach to battleship, who their presence even on a multi-use path in and of itself may be a hazard to mom, dad, and the kids out on a weekend ride. So there's a vast spectrum of users that we have to accommodate in the bicycle mode. On River Road within the city, when River Light's constructed, there is a multi-use path that parallels River Road in the city in that River Light's development. Because that parallels that provides for those users who are not comfortable. Now, in the area where I live and where I work, I occasionally commute on River Road via bicycle. And I'm an experienced rider. I do feel comfortable riding with traffic, but
you also have to trust the drivers in that case. And aren't most of the fatalities a result of people in vehicles hitting bicyclists?
The one that I'm aware of, that of course is the two who passed down near the Sanders Road intersection. There was actually a heavy influence of substance.
That's right.
That was involved
in that case.
Yes. It was my understanding that I believe they were actually on the shoulder of the road when that happened. And again, that's outside the city, and I have to rely on the narrative and the officer's report at that point.
Right. As we've reported over the last half decade or so, the city of Wilmington has been typically more invested in providing bus service above and beyond the need category. New Hanover County hasn't been as supportive of funding a bus system that, frankly, is lightly used by what we call choice riders. Those are people who would choose to get on the bus, but they don't have to. They have access to their own vehicles. And that then makes it harder to attract those choice riders because the public transit system isn't very robust and takes a lot more time than just jumping in one's car and going where they need to go. Where are we now with that, Mike Kozlowski, in terms of how officials are looking at it and what role that is playing in the planning for the future of this region?
Well, the Cape Fear Public Transportation Authority is the entity that operates the transit service in the city of Wilmington and New Hanover County. They recently completed their short-range transit plan, which looks at the transit system over the next 5 years. At the MPO, we look more long-range over the next 25 years, and we work cooperatively with the Cape Fear Public Transportation Authority in their planning. And also, we provide funding to the authority for their operations and ADA accessibility and things of that nature. So we have a very good working relationship with the Cape Fear Public Transportation Authority. When the authority was created, they were really created to fail because they didn't have a dedicated funding source. And so they have to rely heavily on the city, the county, the federal government and state government to fund their operations.
Do you think that there's any shift in the attitude of, forgive me if I'm putting you in an awkward position here, but I have to ask the question. I mean, is there any growing awareness that funding a public transit system actually will address some of these issues of, you know, bulging vehicle load on the roadways?
Well, I think, you know, public transportation will never pay for itself, and it is a service that we need to provide in order to.
It will never pay for itself.
No, it's always going to be subsidized. But it is a service that is important to the community, and it is a service that we need to provide to alleviate some of the congestion that we're seeing on our roadways, as well as serve the needs of the community. And so it's a very important service. The Cape Fear Public Transportation Authority operates on a coverage model. So there's two different types of transit models. There's a coverage model and there's a convenience model. So you have to decide, are you going to serve a larger population, or are you going to be more convenient and have more frequent routes? The strategy that the authority is under is that they're trying to serve a greater population. And so, you know, if there was more money allocated toward the program, then they might be able to change that philosophy a little bit and serve a more convenient population and go to the convenience model. But it really comes down to the dollars that are allocated. And so, you know, if the authority could get more money and have a dedicated funding source, then that might be an opportunity to transform the system.
You're listening to Coastline. It's a conversation about the changing traffic, pedestrian, and bicycle landscape in the Cape Fear region. With us today, Don Bennett. He's a traffic engineer for the City of Wilmington, and Mike Kozlowski, Executive Director of the Wilmington Urban Area Metropolitan Planning Organization. Today's discussion is pre-recorded. That interactive mapping tool, Mike Kozlowski, that's part of Cape Fear Forward 2045?
Moving Forward
2045. It's a pretty interesting tool to just look at the suggestions that people made about what they'd like to see happen in the region. And one of those issues, before we leave the topic of mass transit, is bus service to the beaches in New Hanover County. So where is that? And that certainly would alleviate some of the parking problems in places like, say, Wrightsville Beach. But there are stakeholders there who perhaps don't want to see bus service coming to their town.
And you know, I'm not aware of any recent conversations between the Transit Authority and the town of Wrightsville Beach, for example, about providing transit service to Wrightsville Beach. I do know that, you know, there has been conversations in the past, and there is a service that is provided down to Carolina Beach. But as far as it relates to Wrightsville Beach, I'm not aware of any recent conversations.
Is there anything from a just progressive traffic point of view that bus service to, say, Wrightsville Beach and the other beach towns, Curie Beach, would help to alleviate?
Well, I think it would provide a service. It would provide an opportunity for the folks that work in some of the restaurants and in the hotels and things to be able to access work down at the beach, down at Wrightsville Beach, for example. However, there is a statute that requires the town to sign on to bus service down there. And so that's a conversation that would need to be had between the town and the Cape Fear Public Transportation Authority.
Don Bennett, part of your work is looking at ways to solve safety issues and the growing vehicle load on the roads. There is this quadrant roadway approach, which is a relatively new idea. Can you tell us about that?
For a long time, our focus on processing traffic at an intersection has been to deal with it at a single point. And that is, for example, I'll use College and Oleander. Okay, if you focus all of those movements on that one point, you essentially have about a 70-foot by 70-foot square in the middle of the intersection where everybody's competing for that same space. So we use a traffic signal to divide that space up by time. Okay, a quadrant roadway becomes a divide and conquer approach. Let's take some of the turning movements from the same from the main intersection, and let's move them to an intersection slightly down the road, so that now instead of having one intersection with very complex movements, left turns followed by a through and left, followed by the throughs, by another through and left, and maybe the throughs, and then another through and left, you get a sequence. You have, say, five or six movements in sequence, and each time you change, you lose some time to both the yellow and the red. Now we take this traffic and divide it up, and College and Oleander just becomes a two-movement intersection. It's either green on College or it's green on Oleander.
And that's the plan for this very busy intersection.
Exactly. Now, you relocate some of that traffic.
And I'm going to get you to expand on that when we come back. You're listening to Coastline. Today, it's an exploration of new traffic patterns, innovative approaches to dealing with heavy traffic, creating walkability in the Cape Fear region, and increasing safety for bicyclists. We'll be back after this 90-second break. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline. You're listening to Coastline. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn. Today we're taking a closer look at the increasing traffic load on local roadways, the challenges with pedestrian and bike safety, and how regional planners are tackling these issues. Don Bennett and Mike Kozlowski are with us today. Don Bennett is a traffic engineer for the City of Wilmington. Mike Kozlowski is executive director of the Wilmington Urban Area Metropolitan Planning Organization. Today's conversation is pre-recorded. And Don Bennett, just before we went to break, you had explained the concept behind a quadrant intersection design, which is what will be happening at the busiest intersection. Is it in New Hanover County, the busiest intersection, College and Oleander?
I would say it competes
with Wilmington.
Within the city of Wilmington, it is the, I would not say the busiest, but it is definitely in the top three.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So you've got this quadrant design going on. Continue your description of that.
Well, as we said before the break, we've reduced College and Oleander down to either, green on College or green on Oleander with the associated yellows and reds necessary to go from one to the other safely. The left turns now are displaced to two smaller intersections upstream or downstream. And what we find is when we do that, by having three intersections that can cycle quicker, the queues build up less, there's less delay, and when you combine the delay reduction with the slight increase in travel time, overall, you actually get through the intersection quicker. Even though it may seem that you're going a little farther to make your turns, you're going to get through there faster than if it was a standard deal with everything at one point intersection. What we also have to realize is if we keep widening our roadways and circling back around to the prior discussion about pedestrian and bicycle safety, the longer that pedestrian is in the roadway, the more exposure they have. By using the quadrant roadway, we can keep the number of approach lanes on an intersection minimized, meaning that the distance they're crossing is shorter, their exposure is not as great, and we can cycle the signal quicker because when we add a pedestrian indication to a traffic signal, we have to include a walk, typically 7 seconds. That's intended to get the pedestrian that is queued on the corner started into the crossing. And then we have a flashing don't walk, such that the last pedestrian who enters the intersection legally before the onset of the flashing don't walk is stepping onto the opposite curb prior to us going to yellow for the parallel movement and then through the red clearance.
There is also a hybrid quadrant design happening at Carr and Market. How do you pronounce that street name, by the way? Not Market, but the other one.
That is a local debate in which I will not step.
Okay, so if you had to say the names of the streets, though, how do you say them in discussions with your colleagues?
Well, being a transplant since 1997, I've always heard it pronounced Carr. Being from the in a prior example, there was a Kerr drug which was spelled the same way. So, you know, depending upon the context, I can pronounce it depending upon the audience I'm with.
You'll adjust to whomever. Mike Kozlowski, what's your answer to that?
That's a good question.
My apolitical friends here.
That's right. I'll go with Don's answer.
Okay. So let's. I've heard the debate as well, and I stick with Carr for now. The hybrid quadrant, what's happening there? Very confusing.
Well, there are actually two types of hybrids, and we will talk about that one secondarily with a project we have coming up across town. When you look at a typical quadrant, you would relocate all of your left turns to a secondary roadway, i.e. the way we're looking at College and Oleander, using Parkway Drive to facilitate those movements. At Market and KERR, that we have
Carr.
Exactly. We have some movements that can still be accommodated at the intersection. It really comes down to looking at what is the most efficient way to address the intersection needs. In that case, maybe on Cinema Drive, the modeling revealed that we didn't have enough capacity on Cinema Drive to handle those relocated movements. It could be the additional travel time didn't offset the time savings at the intersection. A number of different factors could have gone into that. Each alternative or each iteration is run through a model, and you look at what serves the intersection best in that long-term projection. We look at the second type of hybrid, which is what we're looking at and is currently proposed for Market and Eastwood, where that hybrid will actually use a quadrant roadway to serve all of the left turns in the similar way that we would College and Oleander. But when they looked at the 40-year projections on the volumes at Market, at Military and Eastwood, it still wouldn't accommodate. And at that point, they grade separated the two. They're going to build Eastwood a bridge over Military Cutoff.
And what's the timing on that, Mike Kozlowski?
It's going to be built in two different phases. The first phase is going to be the Drysdale Drive extension, which I think is funded in fiscal year 2020. And then the actual interchange project, which would be funded in 2021.
We're also, we received here at the station several emails from people who live near the intersection of 21st Street and Market. And at some point, was there a discussion about putting a crosswalk in there or some sort of traffic signal to help pedestrians move safely from one side of Market Street to the other? Don Bennett?
Yes, ma'am. We performed that study in-house in my shop, and it's still at the preliminary stages, and the reason being is we haven't had a final decision on how to move forward. When we did the evaluation, we put up a video camera, and we counted the number of pedestrians, and we went through the North Carolina DOT's protocol. Market Street's there, so we're going to follow their protocol for the study. And they say that we need 20 pedestrians in any given hour of the day. Mm-hmm. Well, we hit 14 twice, so we were 6 short of the needed. However, those same persons who emailed you here at the station were emailing us and saying, you know, we really don't feel comfortable crossing Market Street.
Right. One woman actually said that she's out there with her children, with a stroller, and she still feels like drivers racing up and down Market Street don't really care. I mean, multiple people said they feel like their lives are at risk the way the driving behavior happens on that stretch of Market.
Understood. And then what we would term that as being latent demand, demand that is there, but it just isn't showing up in the data.
Because people won't cross there. It's not safe.
There's enough of a disincentive to cross that they don't feel doing.
So this means safe. That people who live in that neighborhood will drive a block or two to get a coffee because it's not safe to just walk over and across the street.
Well, we'd say it's not safe, but part of that evaluation is to look at pedestrian collisions. And in the time that crosswalk has been in there, there have been no pedestrian collisions there. So to say it is unsafe might be overstating it a little bit, but to say it is uncomfortable is accurate.
Fair enough. So where is that then in the pipeline?
Well, we presented that study to DOT and said, listen, we didn't hit the mark. But we understand, and you've been getting the emails too, that there are persons who want to use this. Well, a hawk, similar to what the appropriate treatment per the DOT's protocols, would be a hawk if we had those 20 pedestrians in 1 hour.
And explain to us what a hawk is.
If you're familiar with the signal over in Wrightsville Beach, a traditional pedestrian traffic signal is red, yellow, green. For the motorist, walk, don't walk for the pedestrian. You get a pedestrian that pushes the button, they're going to stop the roadway, and in a traditional signal, they would maintain a solid red during that entire time, whether your lane of traffic is obscured or not by the pedestrian. So let's say the pedestrian is a jogger. Okay? He's going to clear the intersection in 5 to 7 seconds. But we have to design for a pedestrian that walks 3.5 feet per second. So the design time that we would have you stopped, instead of that 4 to 7 seconds that the jogger can cross, may be somewhere in the area of 20 to 22. And from that perspective, it really undermines the motorist's expectations at that point. The hawk will stop the motorist. In other words, the pedestrian pushes the button. The motorist will see a flashing yellow. That is to let the motorist know, I have a demand for pedestrian service over here. It will then go through the yellow, similar to the way that a traffic signal would display. And during the walk indication for the pedestrian to get them started in their crossing, you would have double solid reds side by side.
So there is nothing ambiguous about that kind of a signal for the driver.
Exactly. But we recognize that some pedestrians will cross faster, or only half of the road may be blocked as the pedestrian traverses it. In that case, after that walk is terminated, then the lights would go flashing red side by side. It would go left, right, left, right. We call it a wig-wag pattern. From that perspective, now the motorist, once the pedestrian has cleared their lane of travel and there are no other pedestrian conflicts with which to yield, can proceed. So we're reducing.
And so does that hawk technology then sense the location of the pedestrian in the crosswalk?
It does not. It stops after the solid red stops.
So it's
stops.
A timing
exactly.
issue.
Exactly.
That makes sense.
But in reducing the delay for the motorist, what we have found is that the compliance rate at those goes up. And that's really what we're looking for, is compliance from the motorist and meeting both their expectations, yet having the ability for the pedestrian to stop the main line so that they feel comfortable crossing.
When you talk about pedestrian crossings and busy roadways, I think about 3rd Street in downtown Wilmington. There is a pedestrian crossing that's in the residential part of downtown Wilmington, the historic district. I'm not sure exactly what that cross street is. Mike Kozlowski?
It's Ann Street.
Ann Street. And there's a flashing light that's on the side of the road, but I've seen drivers blow through that flashing light when there's a pedestrian getting ready to cross. And I'm assuming that it's not ill intentions, that this is just really a confusing kind of technology for the driver. Don Bennett, is there any discussion about that?
When we look at that particular intersection, the markings on the pavement and the signs themselves establish the legal right-of-way rules for that crossing. Once the pedestrian has stepped into the crosswalk, by statute, any motorist that is closer than the stopping distance on 3rd Street, well, the pedestrian can't dart out in front of them where they can't stop. So they would be allowed to proceed. But anybody behind them is required to yield to that pedestrian.
But if motorists don't know that road and don't know that that pedestrian walkway is there, can this be confusing or even alarming for drivers? Have you heard issues around drivers not really understanding that they need to stop? As you know, you described the beacon or the hawk technology, and that seems, unequivocal. It's very clear. There's a yellow light and then there's a double red. Very different from this kind of a walkway situation.
Exactly. And when we ran in conjunction with that 21st and Market, we were also charged with looking at 3rd and Ann as part of that study. And again, it's not complete. We haven't gotten direction. But in that case, we were either farther off the mark, and we hit 12 pedestrians, and we only hit it in 1 hour. And again, because we're collecting this with video, we also get to see how the intersection's operating. By the DOT protocols, 3rd Street is a DOT street, US 17 business. When we go through their protocols, the rapid flash beacon, or RRFB, that's in place was deemed the appropriate treatment. So that goes back to getting our motorists to understand what their responsibilities are, as well as getting our pedestrians to be vigilant that and pay attention, because the consequences are too dire to not do so.
Mike Kozlowski of the WMPO, one of the questions we frequently get from folks in Brunswick County is, when is that third crossing going to happen over the Cape Fear River? And will people ever be able to walk from Brunswick to New Hanover County?
Well, the answers to your questions are, we're working on them. The additional crossing over the Cape Fear River is a project that is a priority of our MPO board. It is something that we're working on and in collaboration with the North Carolina Department of Transportation. And we are going through the environmental review process on that project. Currently, there are six alternatives that are under consideration. It started out with over 20. That was narrowed down to 12. Now we're down to six. We hope to select what's considered the least environmentally damaging practical alternative this summer. And then following that would identify a route. The next step is obviously to come up with the financial resources to pay for a project of that magnitude. And so we are looking at how we might fund a project. NCDOT has a prioritization process that they use to prioritize projects at the statewide, regional, and division tiers. And we're working to try to figure out how we can get that project to score the highest that we can get it to score.
It's basically a mathematical formula, right?
It is, and it looks at a number of different criteria. And congestion being one, safety is another, travel time, things of that nature. And so we are working.
So would a pedestrian or a multi-use path be part of that same project?
That has not been finalized yet. There has been a lot of desire to have a bike ped facility located in conjunction with that project. We heard through our long-range planning process that we're going through now that there's a desire to connect Leland and the 133 intersection with downtown Wilmington. And so, you know, might we put something parallel to the causeway? You know, those are all things that we're looking at and evaluating, you know, when we release the draft Cape Fear Moving Forward 2045. I think that, you know, we'll have a little bit more information about where we might go with those projects.
And tell us again when that draft is coming out.
Well, it'll be early 2020 is when the draft Cape Fear Moving Forward 2045 report will be released. We're required to adopt it by November of 2020.
And that's this edition of Coastline. Don Bennett, Mike Kozlowski, thank you both so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Coastline's technical director is Ken Campbell. Producer is Rachel Keith. Production manager is Caitlin Hanrahan. Caitlin Freund is our webmaster. Coastline is a production of WHQR Public Media. If you missed part of this episode, look for it at whqr.org. Get the podcast, find it on the HQR app, or just tune in for the rebroadcast of this episode Sunday afternoon at 3. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline. Thank you.